to DPME to brief the committee. I don't know, Deputy Minister Sweya, before that, I think you must give us an opening overview of this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. And good morning to colleagues from DPME and COGSTAR. I just want to apologize. I'm on the road, so if I do the video, network might be a problem. Chair, we are very happy to come and brief the committee about the work which we continue to do. The DG will take us through just a few highlights that, Chair, after the president had went throughout the country, Eastern Cape, KZN, and Limpopo, to launch the piloting of the district development model. We have seen ministers and deputy ministers who are assigned to various districts also going to launch. For example, the minister was in Herigwala. On Friday, I will be in Skukune. And the committee will take you through in relation to other ministers who are deployed and deputy ministers to other districts in terms of how far are they. The other issue, Chair, is that in relation to the presidential hotline, you'll remember that when it was launched in 2009, you only had email and only calling, which you could launch your complaint. We have successfully digitalized the presidential hotline. As we speak currently, we've got an app which we have launched, the Kaoleza app, which you can download on your phone, and then you are able to launch your complaint. We also have got a USSD number. This we did because it is important to ensure that we create all platforms for our people to be able to interact with us. I'm going to request that the DG take us through. Thank you, Chair.
You can take the platform, DG.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, DM and colleagues. Thanks once again for this opportunity for inviting the department to come and present to ourselves as a way of accounting for the work that we do on the three areas that have been referred to. Now, Chairperson, according to our agenda, the agenda that we have received from the committee, we will start with the presentation on the local government management improvement model, and then that will be followed by discussions and then the DDM discussions, and then the presidential hotline and the discussions will also follow after that presentation. So that being fine, Chair, I just want to make a few comments with regard to the first presentation, which is the local government improvement model. But by saying that government as a whole has recognized the need to work on the capacity of the state as a precondition for service delivery and effective governance. So this issue is not only being discussed with respect to local government, but also at the national government was faced with this work together with DPSA and others on how best we build the capacity of the state. Because we can't talk about a developmental state when the state has no capacity to do what it's supposed to do. And I guess as time goes on, or from time to time, ourselves and DPSA, as well as others in this kit, will brief the committee on work that is being done at the national level to build the capacity of the state. So for the purposes of today, we're talking about the work that we're doing to support the local sphere of government by building the necessary capacity. Now, as DPME, we are very much involved, pleased with that project of supporting local government to ensure that we have the necessary capacity for local government to deliver services to our people. So we will be speaking to that, and the presentation is going to be led by Hassan Mohamed. And as indicated, after the presentation, we are going to take questions from the honorable members on this issue. And on that note, and with your permission, Chair, I ask Hassan Mohamed to commence with the presentation. Thank you.
I think what we should do, when he has presented, we are not going to immediately engage in discussions. You can give us the presidential hotline report, and then we discuss them together, because we did receive the documents earlier. So that we must not waste much time. After the presentation of the PME, we must get the presidential hotline cases reported during COVID-19. And then discussions will follow thereafter.
Thanks, Chairperson. With your permission, we'll do exactly that. Hassan?
Thank you, DG, and good morning, honorable members and colleagues. I'm going to, of course, mindful of the fact that I've been given 20 minutes, keep within that kind of timeline. So I'm assuming that, of course, everybody has the presentation since it's not going to be flighted. But just to give people a sense of the points to be covered, there's the presentation will cover about 10 points. Just to remind people and give especially those who are new to the Portfolio Committee a background to this particular initiative, we also highlight the roles and responsibilities of key partners. This initiative is done jointly with partners at national, provincial, and of course local level. We will take the committee through what LGMM is about, its concept, what it is measuring, and so on, and the process. And then we'll go into the details of the municipalities that we enrolled in that period and the results. Thank you. So here we are. If we can go to the next slide. Thank you. So that's where we are, and we'll talk about the results and the enrollments there, and then conclude. So in terms of background, the LGMM, people will recall that it was a concept that we launched about 5 years ago, and that follows the what we did at the national and provincial level called the Management Performance Assessment Tool. Of course, the LGMM was tailored for local government conditions and needs, which were quite different, as you can imagine, from national and provincial. The idea and the concept and the details around performance areas and so on were jointly developed by those parties, including DPOC, National Treasury, SALGA, and key national departments such as water and sanitation, energy, environment, and so on. And on the basis of that, it was agreed that this would be a valuable initiative to identify municipal institutional vulnerabilities and performance gaps. Next slide, please. So the next slide starts to cover, which I won't spend too much of time on. As I said, this is an initiative with partners. Can we move to the next slide? I'll continue while the slide catches up. I won't spend too much of time on this, but of course, there's the key responsibilities are important when you're working with key partners, so everybody understands their respective roles and contributions. So that's what the DPME does in relation to this initiative. Provincial COCTAs, national departments have an important role, as I said, and municipalities themselves. I mean, the key in all of this is particularly the other departments. And the point about this is that once the assessments are released, all these departments that agreed to participate have also agreed that you'll see that point to utilize the results. And as we go into the presentation, that you'll see that that's one of the sort of problem areas that once the assessments are released, you know, not much is done from the other partners in utilizing the LGMM results to inform the intervention and support strategies. Next slide, please. Just quickly to run through, and this is what the DG has already touched on, just to give people a sense of what the focus and logic of the LGMM is. And the idea was derived from that state block at the top right-hand corner from the NDP. So the point is that, you know, we can't wave into existence a developmental state. We have to work hard at it. And the point about the LGMM is that if you think about what municipalities are expected to deliver, the results, then it's important for us to understand what is the operational and workplace capabilities that must exist in order to produce this result. And that's what the LGMM does. It considers and focuses on those operational and workplace capabilities of municipalities and see whether they exist in order to deliver the result. And it does that by analyzing the internal workings of the municipality. Next slide, please. Part of the discussion with our key partners that I mentioned earlier was to say, okay, you know, it's all very well that we're saying that municipalities, their internal workings and capabilities must are important, but it's not just capabilities in general. So we discussed at length, you know, in which areas must municipalities have those essential capabilities, and these are the key performance areas. And then we asked ourselves, if these are the key performance areas, then what must be the standard of performance? So you'll see that we have those six key performance areas, starting with, of course, planning, going on to service delivery, financial management, community engagement, and governance. Next slide, please. Then the next slide just touches on, you know, then how are these key performance areas and the different standards assessed. And that just gives you a sort of robot or traffic light format, how the municipality is doing, with level one being lacking the essential capabilities, level two having some of those capabilities but not sufficient, level three is sufficient capability, and level four is where the municipality is essentially innovating. Next slide, please. The LGMM is of course underpinned by a very sort of substantive process, which is described in the next slide. We have starting with the launch, the self-assessment, moderation, feedback, and review and improve. If you go to the next slide, it sort of describes these in a little more. So in the launch phase, as you can see, this is when we would discuss with our provinces which municipalities they would like to nominate to and who will benefit from this initiative. And then those municipalities are selected and commitments are expected from the MMM executive mayors that they prepare to participate and will apply their minds to this. Then, of course, they are trained. Following that, the municipality itself does the assessment. It then reaches us, and together with sector departments like water and sanitation, national treasury, and others, we look at their assessment, and we see whether the moderate, whether the results or the scores that they're given for those key performance areas and standards match the evidence that was there. And on that basis, the municipality, we send the moderated scores back, and they're given an opportunity to review, after which we finalize. And once the finalized scorecard is sent to municipalities, signed off on, then of course the improvement planning stage begins. Next slide, please. So just now we will just go into the municipalities we enrolled. There were 35 of them. That's how they distributed across the different provinces. Just to say that although there are 35 municipalities, you know, to give a perspective of, you know, what we're talking about in terms of population and households, in those 35 municipalities, the total households are in the order of 3.35 million. Population coverage in those 35 municipalities, 12.6 million. And the aggregate budgets of these municipalities, combined budgets, at 29.8 billion. So, you know, if we do the assessment and follow through the process, you can see that, you know, although, of course, the LGMM doesn't cover all the municipalities in any one year, it does cover a significant number of people. And if we start getting capabilities right in this municipality, the potential impact is on 29.6 million people. Next slide, please. So this is what we call a heat map, and it basically gives an overview of how the municipalities, which are at the top running from Amatoli across, and the standards, key performance areas, and the standards are on the left hand.
Sorry, sir, I'm informed that there is no volume from your side. Other members can't hear you. Can you address that? The notes that has come through to me.
Oh, sorry, my apologies. I thought I'm being heard. Can you hear me, Chair?
I can hear you on my side, but I have a message from other members that they can't hear you.
Oh, I don't know. I've got all my volume sorted, and I'm also doing a quick test, and it seems to be on maximum, or close to maximum. It might be the settings on those particular members, if some can hear me and others can't.
Yeah, okay, continue. If the problem persists, they will let me know. You can continue.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. All right, so this is, as I said, the heat map, and it's just a high-level representation of what the results look like. And we can see that there are, you know, very few standards that municipalities are performing well, at least in this group. So, you know, there's the one on the IDP 1.1, you can see that there's less reds, basically. Similarly with, you know, the electrification, which is 2.6 on the left-hand side, less reds, more greens, and so on. And right at the bottom, delegations. But, you know, if we take the whole group, if you look at the whole service delivery area, you can see it's awash with reds or ones. Similarly with financial management and of course, the others. So we can see that in important areas, this particular group of municipalities are not performing according to the LGMM assessment. So you know, particularly in key areas like water and sanitation and so on. All right, so we've lost the presentation, but I'm going to continue on my side. The presentation continues with a different picture of the heat map, which just shows that if you take out all the next slide, please. So in the next slide, if we go to the next slide. I'm going to continue. The next slide is just a different way of seeing the results, you know, in a sort of aggregate way and collective way. But I want to now go into sort of the details of each of these KPIs and standards. If we can get to that. If not, I'm basically on slide 15. And here, if we go to the first standard, we'll see that deals with integrated development planning and implementation. So here, a large number, all right, this was the slide, it's another form of the heat map. So if we were to take out the ones and twos, you can see that where the areas of performance actually reside and in which municipalities more clearly. So municipalities like Nkangala are doing very, very well similarly. Anyway, here's the detail. So if you look at the first standard, right, of the municipalities that we have, you can see on the quality of the planning, you know, a significant number, 13 of those scored at level 1 and 6. On level 2. So in other words, either poorly, right, or unsatisfactory, and very few at a high level. The next part of it is, of course, around, you know, that's the planning, but how do they translate that into a service delivery improvement plan, which is the SDPIP, and of course, to what extent that plan is on an annual basis reasonably budgeted for. And there too, the numbers that are scoring at 1 and 2 are high, you know, compared to others who are not. All right, so if we move, so that's the situation in relation to the first KPA. If we get to the service delivery one, we can see that in the provision of basic services, it's a bit better with a lot more municipalities scoring at level 12, but also then at level 2. But on water and sanitation, we've got, you know, a serious underperformance. And this is that many of those, you can see it's compared to standard 2.3, which is the municipal strategic self-assessment. This is what water and sanitation does. And that is it talks about the functionality of the water service authorities. In other words, their operational capabilities in terms of about 18 recognized operational functions and attributes of a water and sanitation function. And they score very poorly. So of course, you know, if the institutions are not working, you know, water and sanitation services is going to be affected. I'm sure by now everybody's seen that seems to be the sort of performance across services, which is of course is a very worrying sign. If we go to the next area, which is on human resource, and this is where we check whether municipalities are applying the prescribed recruitment practices. Members of the committee are aware that that you know, government has published competency requirements for senior managers, and that is because, I mean, the Auditor General has constantly highlighted that a key problem prior to the you know, the promulgation of those regulations, about 70% of senior managers were not are not competent or skilled enough to do the job. On that basis, the government introduced minimum competency and recruitment requirements, and this is what it shows. So again, not 12 at level one and two at level three, which is nine and another three at higher. So again, the sort of compliance or with the recruitment practices and the minimum competency requirements are low. Also, performance management of senior managers is underperforming totally. We can look at 25 of them are either at level 20 at level two and five at level one. Next slide, please. So this is on financial management, and I think this is a picture which many of us would expect, given the sort of dire states of finances, dire financial situations in many municipalities, and this just reflects that picture. But the issue here is that is, you know, there's a lot of things that's in the hands of municipalities. I mean, budget planning is within your control, and you know, if you have the right people, you should be able to come up with a credible budget, you know. And but as the results here shows again, virtually all of them, right, don't have a credible budget. Then the irregular expenditure is also, I mean, significant. Revenue challenges remained, which is standard 4.3, and of course, supply chain problems. So all of those are key to a healthy financial situation in municipalities, and we can see with this particular group of municipalities, the results are very, very poor. And I suppose, you know, in a sense, we can generalize this to you know, many municipalities across. If we go to the next one, next standard touched on community engagement. So this is the tries to see to what extent the municipalities take community engagement and participation seriously. And there, again, we're not seeing good results. And this highlights the sort of analysis that's coming through various surveys where communities significant, I mean, just 40 to 46% of communities feel that municipalities are sufficiently engaging them. If we go to the next one, which is on governance, there's eight standards under governance which we track. And this this ties in with you know, what is in, what is raised by the Auditor General about the quality of internal controls. So in this particular key performance area, you'll see that we look at the key things related to internal controls and conduct. So the Municipal Public Accounts Committee's audit findings, internal audit functioning, and so on. And there, I mean, of course, the results again are not particularly encouraging in general. delegations are the ones which has the largest green bar. But that's often something that's easier to do. Be that as it may, that's where the best performance was recorded. So that's then the picture. If we go to the next slide, which is slide 21, is where we just update the committee on where we are in relation to, of course, this year, which is also impacted upon by, as we know, COVID. So we went through the similar process of approaching the provinces identifying municipalities. And even under these difficult conditions, we have received commitments. Commitments, by commitments, I mean signed letters from MMs, and that's from 23 municipalities. So not bad, you know, under the circumstances. We've also managed to orientate and train all of the, so we changed our system to a virtual system, so that, of course, the process doesn't get held up, and it worked quite well with even the training. And that happened on the 30th of September. So assessments that process will continue, and we expect their assessments to be completed by November, after which we'll do moderation and subsequent phases, which will involve review and finalization. Just to say, and then the last one is just an update on improvement planning. Now this is where the difficulties arise. The slide there depicts the improvement planning that we do. In other words, SDPME, where we committed to get directly involved, and as this slide shows, those are the municipalities that are active, okay? Even the previous cohort, we've got Kamisberg, Namakwa, and all that producing regular quarterly monitoring reports and so on. But the hello, municipalities Akan. Which provinces...
Hello, Akan, yes? Hassan, can you hear me? Hassan?
Yes, I can.
Can you...
Yes, I can hear you.
Can you move towards wrapping up, because we have other two presentations to receive?
Of course, I will. Let me just quickly go to the conclusion. So I am on the last slide now. So the important point in the conclusion, which that I want to stress, is of course that we're still finding that provincial departments are not playing their part despite the commitments. In order to sort of overcome some of this stuff, the future is sort of how we're looking at this is that in the context that the DDM firstly presents us with an opportunity. Remember, part of the DDM is not only to, of course, ensure that we effect development, but the DDM is also intended to, as it goes about working in districts and all that, to build capacity of municipalities. And so we want to encourage this to be and ensure that this LGMIM is a key component of that process, so that it is able to give insights into the workings of municipalities, their capabilities, and what support and improvements are needed there in terms of building capacity. We of course will be engaging with National DCOG in this regard. Let me leave it there. I think I've already sort of gone past, but we'll can follow up with discussions. Thank you for your patience and time. Yeah, thanks.
Chairperson, thank you. That concludes our presentation on this topic. Without much ado, and with your permission, Chair, I'll ask that we take the next presentation. In fact, the two presentations, because they will be done by one person, I'll just ask her to deal with both presentations and focus on salient issues. We now have less than 2 hours to finish the meeting. So,
okay.
Dr. Biare?
Okay, so right.
Good morning, honorable members, DG, DDGs, and colleagues. I'm presenting the presidential hotline, the presentation as the head of frontline service delivery monitoring, and the presidential hotline is one of the tools that we use in DPME in providing evidence as well as responding to citizens' complaints as well. The next slide, please. Well, I won't dwell on the content because, I know everybody has read it. Well, the purpose of the presentation is basically to respond to the question that was posed by the committee, as well as, to give the scope of the report. It will extend right from the very start of the lockdown, which was on the 27th of March to the 30th of September, 2020. The next slide, please. But we are mindful of the fact that we have presented the portfolio committee with reports that were asked by the portfolio committee. We actually presented two reports to the portfolio committee already. Now, just in case we have new members, I think I need to stress that the presidential hotline is actually an apex complaint management tool. So that means that practically it means that people come to us when they've exhausted all other means of interacting with the department's concerns. And, the presidential hotline, we receive complaints from the toll-free number, call center, emails, letters, and walk-ins. And we could move to the other side, to the other slide, and it's captured on an electronic monitoring system. And we also monitor the resolution of the complaints. Now, this is actually a very important slide in terms of our how we interact with the whole of government, as well as how we relate it to the National Development Plan and how we monitor and how we, as DPME, also present the findings in an integrated monitoring report that we present to Cabinet as well. Now, basically, the presidential hotline is linked to offices of the Premier, and they consist of provincial, what we refer to as provincial liaison. They lead us from a provincial perspective in terms of our provincial public liaison forum as well that we lead as the presidency. Now, what is important in terms of COVID is that due to lockdowns, that the presidential, our formal relationships and our informal relationships with our partners across government, the other levels of government. I'll give you one example of where we actually lose them under lockdown conditions when we were actually not allowed to go across provinces. For example, as I've mentioned, the presidential hotline receives walk-ins as well. And the Hitikani Women's Group came to the union buildings to report to us that they were given a land. They are a cooperative, a women's group, who is a cooperative in the Giani area, and they were given permission because for a cooperative and were given land in terms of the permission to occupy by the traditional council, and they wanted us as the presidential hotline to actually intervene in this process. And what we had found was that we had to get around the table with a whole lot of stakeholders and also mediate with the traditional council to actually ensure that that these women were actually get that permission to occupy. Now, it wasn't actually, the mediation wasn't actually that easy, in that another organization was given the exact spot of land where these women were actually given, and they had already got livelihood activities going. So in terms of when the lockdown happened, we had just about concluded the PTO, because we didn't want to release, tell it was a resolution on a hotline query until we actually were in possession of the PTO for these women. And because of lockdown conditions, we couldn't actually go. And what we had done was, in terms of using the offices of the Premier and the municipal contacts, the informal relationships that we have, they were actually given the PTO. And that we stressed that even if it's lockdown, they had to get it because it was their livelihood. And because it was agriculture, it also, ensured food security for a small little community that were there. Also, another example of how we actually responded is actually we had, because as I say, as Frontline, we built very good networks, including with communities. And they do get our cell phone numbers and our email addresses. And another community member, through emails directly to my email address, had contacted us about water tankers not available, once again, in the Giani local municipality. And through our relationships with the municipalities, with the offices of the Premier, we managed to actually get those tankers out to this community who doesn't have access to, normal flows of water. So therefore, these informal relationships, I think, in building a capable state is also extremely important if we are going to, lead us on community, to meet the community development principles of what we're trying to achieve. The next slide, please. I'll actually go, the next slide, please. Well, the next slide is basically how we work, and I will quickly, in case the committee is not aware, some of the members, I will actually just state very quickly, is that the hotline call center is actually outsourced to CETA. And, and it cuts across, we get calls. We get all emails, and we also get it through post walk-ins, and whatever we get is actually, in terms of this slide that's there, we actually put it in terms of our electronic system, and it's captured there, whether it's a walk-in, whether it's a thing, and people get acknowledgement immediately that within 3 days is our norms and is our standard, where you get acknowledgement that your query has been logged on. And our standard for resolution is actually 25 days. And then the presidential hotline staff, they are the team, the case management team, who actually monitors the resolution rate in terms of our standards, and then they intervene with the offices of the Premier and the local municipalities where there's gaps to actually respond to this. So there's a team based at Union Building who actually monitors this. The next slide, please. The next slide, please. Well, basically, the next slide is about our capacity. We've got, well, as I say, we have a SLA with CETA, and then our Union Building staff is 18 members of staff. And our PLO forum is actually national, and then we've got PLOs across the national departments as well. Now, I think it's also important for us to talk about some of the improvements we're making. Yesterday, actually, because through working, national departments are actually also building up their local, their PLO forums, going down, you know, in terms of the provincial, their partnerships with their provincial counterparts. And yesterday, I was in a meeting and with me and my team, we were in the meeting with the Department of Human Settlements, and they have actually signed an, you know, they've actually strengthened their PLO forum with their provincial counterparts through SLA, as well as building up proper terms of reference for how they operate here. So this is where we as the presidential hotline are also finding other avenues of how we could strengthen resolution as well, besides the offices of the Premier, but how we strengthen national departments also with their, you know, with their roles in a provincial level as well. And the focus is on how they respond to communities. The next slide, please. As I've mentioned in the next slide, the first COVID report was on the 28th of March, because we actually were an essential, we were classified an essential service by the president. And the call center was, call centers were also, in terms of the regulations, also classified as essential services. Then we actually had to quickly adapt our queries to ensure that we were monitoring COVID responses. But we also had to ensure that we had good links with the COVID helplines as well. The next slide, please. We can see that there were the next, well, the next slide is actually the spatial. It shows us the spatial spread of, the next slide, please. The next slide actually shows us the spatial, the spatial aspects of where we were getting our complaints from. And we can see it now. This is directly related to the DDM, in that, you know, it shows a differentiated approach to space that, and also shows us some policy that we cannot neglect urban areas at the expense of rural areas, because most of our complaints and COVID hotspots were actually in terms of our big cities, such as Cape Town, such as Johannesburg, Swane, Itikwini, Ilembe, you know, the bigger municipalities. So it does show some relationship with the DDM. The next slide actually shows that our calls were actually directly in relation. It escalated with the president's announcements of, the next slide, please. It was announced with the president's, we could even move to the next slide, please. Now, you know, the types of complaints we were getting was on food parcels. And that actually also correlates with the NIDS and the CRAM study that was undertaken, that the main concern of our citizens were based on COVID, during COVID. And thereafter, well, at the first stage, people were wondering about permits. That was because of the funeral, people wanted access to funerals. And we actually did send this because my colleagues from our other branches were sitting at the NAT joints, and we did send our report about the permits, and subsequently the regulations were changed on that. The next slide, please. We can also see that our complaints were also related, the number of complaints. So things led in the number of the most number of complaints, given the demographics of the province, also Limpopo and KZN, given the demographics of the province and the big and the COVID, they were COVID hotspots. But also to say that this is not unusual for our findings, that Gauteng also always actually leads us in terms of the types of complaints. With the numbers of complaints given the demographics of the area. We can move to the next slide, please. Now we're moving into our first quarter report. Well, that was our first quarter report. It shows us once again that food parcels was particularly important across all provinces, as well as unemployment relief to a certain extent. But the others were because it was basically, once again, in terms of meeting immediate needs of communities, because that was the main concern during COVID. And the immediate needs were based on water. The other took into account the other and other, water, electricity, access to basic services. The next slide, please. Once again, we can see the national view in the second quarter. It followed the same kind of provincial overview of the different provinces. The next slide, please. The next slide shows the second quarter once again, but we could see now that with the lockdown, we moved, and with the stabilization of our other departments, and particularly with social development, we actually moved to our food parcels actually was relieved. But what's interesting is, although COVID was a health pandemic, our health department was actually on top of it, and health wasn't actually top of the queries of the department, as well as it was actually based on our social relief impact. Now, I also want to stress that I was actually, as the head of the presidential hotline, I was actually deployed into the communications NAT joint, in that we knew during lockdown that some of these issues had to be addressed from a communications, and we fed our responses, these issues into our higher level structures and into our communication plans of government. The next slide, once again, the next slide, please. We could move because I've already discussed the key trends. The next slide. Now, this is an important slide. What we found in the first quarter was our resolution rate was 99%, because we actually were referring the cases to the COVID responses, to the other COVID lines, because of the information that we needed to give. But in terms of our second quarter, our resolution rate had dropped to 46%. And that was actually a result, as we can see, that these were in terms of our standards. It was basically Gauteng province that actually was 30%. Now, we share a very good relationship as the presidential hotline with all the provinces in terms of improvements and how we actually go forward. And when we actually spoke to Gauteng province, what we had found it earlier actually in the lockdown, not at the end of the second quarter, because as I said, because of the other calls we were getting, we had to keep interacting with our offices of premiers to actually ensure when we got trends to immediately respond. So we did pick it up earlier that the presidential hotline staff of Gauteng province was actually moved at an early stage by the premier of the province with other community outreach programs, in particular the food banks, because food became a major problem. And Gauteng province was quite, they had taken over, they led in terms of the food parcels in that province, whilst DXD and FASA were actually getting ready for the rollout. So that was one of the things that we actually found as the presidential hotline from a monitoring point of view. Can we move to the next slide, please? The next slide is basically talking about some of the improvements we're making. We're actually improving, last year I did report to this committee about our improvements with the support of the Department of Science and Innovation and CSIR. Our report, they did a diagnostic of the presidential hotline. The report was finalized on the 31st of March. And because of lockdown, CSIR was actually overloaded and they couldn't actually present the reports and take the findings. So we couldn't take the findings, the recommendations, but we will be doing it. They did go over and above what our SLA was with them, and they did develop a prototype of a data analytics platform. And that was, we tried, because as I showed earlier, the importance of the hotline in the spatial as well, and in terms of our links to the DDM and the presidency. So we have asked them to give us input in that particular one. So in terms of this and the other parts were some of our improvements in line with our operations that we actually have liaised with CETA as well. So with that, this is the presidential hotline presentation. Thank you, PT.
Thanks, Chair. With your permission, again, I will ask to continue with the next presentation.
Okay, continue.
I actually forgot that our app, we also developed an app. As our deputy minister actually said, that our app was actually developed because once again, to extend coverage to our citizens, particularly in rural areas. But we are being cautious in the rollout and we are piloting it to make sure that we are 100% perfect by the time we actually go national. So this is, I've actually omitted to actually say that. And so that was actually it. And some of the challenges during the COVID was actually addressed. The unavailability of our PLOs, our DG did assist us in trying to, and without tools, we did send letters to all offices of the premiers and the departments to actually make sure that presidential hotline staff, the PLOs, were actually prioritized for tools of trade. We did receive a number of prank calls, and that we could account for maybe people were bored with the lockdown. And, we've dealt with the other issues. So with that, DG, my apologies for missing that out. But with that, thank you very much.
Thank you, can I note hands now for discussion on this presentation?
And Honorable Maluleke, as an apology, she has joined the meeting. She is part of the meeting. So, Maskole, you can correct that. Thank you very much. Let me see hands of those who want to speak.
Chair? Honorable Chair? Chairperson?
Hello?
Yes, Chair?
Yes, I can hear you.
It's Kivi here.
Yeah, but the best is to raise hands in the platform.
Yes, my hand is raised, Chair.
Yeah, it's not in there. Okay. You can take the platform,
Honorable Kibi. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members and the family of TPME. Chairperson, let me appreciate the presentation by the team and also welcome it. Honorable Chair, on LG, ma'am, one understands really that it is those are the attempts to assist in building a local government, as they are really saying. Now, I want to ask this question. There are champions and coordinators in provinces and municipalities that have been appointed from well-doing municipalities and provinces. So are the champions, appointed from the well-doing municipalities and provinces? And if it's not like that, what is the criteria for the appointing champions? My second one, Honorable Chair, is that there is a turnover of municipal managers, chief financial officers, and other senior managers in municipalities. Does it have an impact on the lack of improvement in most municipalities? And then what can be done in this regard? On DDM, I want to know, Honorable Chair, what is the view of public representatives on the district development model initiative across the three spheres of government? Is the model acceptable as a noble idea? And my second one for DDM, what kind of infrastructure projects or any projects do the three spheres of government partnered on with the aim of improving quality of lives of the citizens? Those are my questions. And I thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kibi. Can members please open their video as they speak? I have noted the following. Honorable Lesoma.
Sorry.
Honorable Chair.
It's Honorable Soma.
Yes.
Honorable Clark.
Yes.
Honorable Komani. Honorable Sibisi, in that order.
And Honorable Motsepe, Chairperson.
Did you raise your hands in the platform?
No, you
haven't. Okay, I will note you as well, Honorable Motsepe.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Can you check my hand, Chairperson, if it's reflecting?
Okay.
Can you check? Because I did raise my hand.
Yeah, now you have raised it, Honorable Nduli. Okay.
Chairperson, Malad is also here.
Okay.
Thank you.
The platform, Honorable Soma.
No, Chair, may I pass for now? Thank you.
The next will be Honorable Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, you know, when we discuss this presentation in terms of the status quo of local government, it's really, really worrying. And I would like to know how they're going to go about in order to ensure that local government actually comply to their service delivery charters, because they actually don't do that. You know, they don't comply to the hour ratio that they have to attend to complaints, and certainly doesn't happen. That's the first thing. Local government certainly faces financial and institutional collapse. And we have an unbelievable shortage of critical skills within the system. You know, many professionals like engineers and et cetera no longer apply for jobs in local government because local government's environment is so toxic and politicized. And how are we going to be dealing with rectifying that? And I'll just give you an example. I mean, for instance, you know, the energy department within Ekurhuleni, they have 951 employees in the energy department, where the NERSA requirements is 1,700 employees. They don't comply at all to even the NERSA specifications, and therefore we have an absolute huge problem around energy supply. And I think that, you know, that issue is duplicated in many instances within local government. How are they going to deal with corruption within local government, which, you know, shatters the supply chain management structure that's in place that they should adhere to? Then also, what would the district model actually entail, and will we receive the reports in terms of the pilot projects to see what has been realized within those pilot projects? And just to sort of also highlight that the district model proposes to establish permanent command control councils with executive powers, and that certainly isn't within the constitution. So I'm not sure how that is being dealt with, because surely we have to stick to what the constitution provides for us. Thank you, Chairperson.
You, Honourable Clark, can Honourable Komani come in?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and good morning. And let me apologize for not switching the video on because due to the my network problem. I've got one question that I would want to ask the Department of Cooperative Governance in terms of their KPA 5. That speaks to the ward committees. My question would then be, what is the yardstick that they would use? They use to measure the competency of the ward committees in line with the service delivery that is to be happening. Equally, how do they then measure that against the priorities in terms of the ward based priorities? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Komani. Can I have now Honorable Sibisi?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know whether you can hear me. My network is bad, and I wish to apologize about the picture. I would like to have a few questions to Coctor. My first question is, we have all these objectives laid out on slide 6. But what we are not being told is how these objectives will be achieved. Now, is there a clear strategic plan that details how each one of these objectives will be met? My other question would be, is there any infrastructural funding talks that may have been instituted to ensure that this model is realized? The realization of this model will create jobs, both direct and indirect. The last question is,
with regards to the issues covered during the visit, particularly on service delivery issues, are there any plans or measures that will soon be set in motion to circumvent the lack of service delivery? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Smithy. Can I have Honorable Ntuli?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, Honorable Kibi has covered most of the issues that I've touched on here. But nevertheless, Chair, I wanted to check something in terms of a presidential hotline. When responding, in most cases, people report things that are affecting communities. Now, in responding, does the response end with the individuals, or have they created a platform to address communities in this regard? And two, in terms of DDM, it's one would like to commend the concept, and also DPME to be part and parcel of monitoring on this one as well. To see now the initial plan, is it complementing processes in district and advance, or is that a complete new or they reflect on complete new projects? For instance, you'll find that there is a road that was started in that district, but due to funding, it was not finished. Now, what will happen to this model? Can this model look at that road first, or they are going to start another road, a new road? That is example, particularly what is happening on the ground. Maybe the bridge is not finished, but you'll find now within the concept of the district model, prioritizing something else other than complete. I'm just checking their approach in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Malati.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to limit my questions to the presidential hotline. I mean, one of the worries that I had looking at the presentation was with concern to the resolution rate of cases or logged calls by the Gauteng, at Gauteng Premier's office or the Gauteng provincial government. And I mean, I do get the justification that was put in earlier that there was a shift of, you know, their public license officers or the people in charge of that aspect to focus more on COVID-related issues rather than resolving the issues that came through from that call. But I'm also, you know, trying to reconcile that with the fact that there was a COVID-related help desk that dealt in particular with COVID-related queries. So I'm just trying to reconcile that. And secondly, Chair, is, you know, for us to have a measure of the efficiency in terms of the resolution rate of the presidential hotline, I think it would have been useful to have, you know, the stats pre-COVID vis-a-vis the stats of the resolution of cases during the COVID phase, because rather than do the quarterly one, because the quarterly one, the quality one is quite skewed, because even though it's two successive periods, it doesn't give you a far more detailed and far more insightful measure of the number of cases that have been resolved, for instance, over the last year, compared to this period. And secondly, I mean, my last question is related to the Khaoleza app. I take the point that it is in pilot phase, and I would just like to establish what is the duration of that pilot phase, because the presentation is silent about that, so that once again, you know, we are able to then measure the longevity of what is considered the pilot phase, so that when that time comes, we'll be able to accurately measure the difference that, you know, the app has made in terms of, you know, accelerating resolutions and, you know, bringing communication far much closer to people's fingertips, so that cases are resolved quickly. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Swama. Honorable Soma, I know you have a network problem where you are. I'm giving you the opportunity now.
Honorable, I know much better. Thank. Oh, I can step down. Okay, I can wait for you, Honorable Ma'am.
Okay, all right. Can I come in, Chairperson?
Yeah, come in, Honorable Mzipe.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. And then I would like to pose three questions. The first one is with regards to municipalities. Budget planning is poor in 27 municipalities and financial management is poor in 30 municipalities. What is the department's intervention in this regard? And then the other one is, do these municipalities have internal audit and the municipal managers to monitor good governance? Were performance bonuses paid in this municipality? And then the last one is the presidential hotline for citizen complaints. How sure are you that this will benefit the citizens without any fear or favor or discriminating others? And this will be no backlogs or off responses. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Honorable Soma, come in.
Chairperson, good morning, colleagues, and thank you, Honorable Chair. And also, let us welcome the status report as presented, all of them. Having said that, Chair, probably moving forward, at the end of the presentation, we must receive something that's talk to recommendations to the portfolio committee, because some of the questions would have been covered if there were recommendations, because we are also policymakers and also we oversight in terms of policy implementation and good governance. That would be my first point, because I was going all presentation to say, where do you think the portfolio committee can play a role and assist, in which space would be that? But I'm raising that so that next time we don't just receive a report and then we just ask and then just note there's nothing, because I know Auditor General also does audit the performance of the committees as well. Having said that, I think in a way, what Honorable Malazi was raising, that in terms of, if he used the word efficiency rate, I would say probably also if we can receive, in terms of the hotline, practical evidence-based examples. I know that a Limpopo example was made, but also the other ones. And also, what program do you have as DPME family in terms of all these programs that are driven under your office, to make sure that the public and other institutions, they know that there's a value add on these things, and also so that they can also assist to identify the gaps and make suggestions where possible.
because I rest assured from where I'm coming from, we do not hear much about the whole presidential hotline and the value add. Having said that about the presidential hotline, Chair, is that probably it's more linked to Honorable Motsepe's question as well. To say if we can get the appetite and the positive response of the municipalities or matters that would have raised and their completion in its logical conclusion. Is the other thing to refer the matter and then go back to the complainant to say that your matter is referred there, but the actual positive conclusion of that complaint, you can't measure it. You continuously get dissatisfied communities. The second one, Chair, to DPME, which is linked with the LGMIM model as well. As we are going towards the local government elections, it has started already. There's a ad hoc, like a spontaneous service delivery protest, and it happens in the previous years towards the elections. Is there any deliberate strategy to mitigate or to minimize those public service protests? Because they tend to also to damage government community property. I'm raising that because the first presentation did appreciate also that it's a dual core project, so to say, in terms of COCTA and DPME. To say one would also love to get a plan to respond to that. And also, how do you then, if municipalities and other spheres of government, which is the provincial government, you are not listening to, is it linked then, Chair, with the performance of various ministers, which Honorable Mthembu spoke about it on Thursday last week? I'm just throwing it, I'm being opportunistic, but my understanding is that it has to be linked with all the programs that are within the DPSA, as it were, Chair. The last one that I hope so, let me just go through my notes, Chair, my apology on this one. The last one will be a suggestion, Chair, because what we're discussing here in terms of the president it overlaps to COCTA and also to human settlement and water and sanitation. I would suggest that the DG, I'll say the DG because it's the accounting officer, to say that can you also make sure that you get a report from the recent report of oversight of COCTA portfolio committee? Because it does talk to a lot of things that honorable members have raised, which I would definitely would have raised to say, in your role and your mandate of monitoring and evaluation, what would be your solution in those issues that report will contain? That's all, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And my apology, the network has been taking me in and out from the system. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Can we get response now from the department?
Thanks, Chairperson. I will take a couple of issues and then I'll refer others to colleagues. Just to start with what Honorable Kibi has said, the first issue around the champions that have been sent to the different districts. Our understanding is that at the national level, the champions have been delegated by the president. And at the provincial level, that has been done by the premiers in the respective provinces. So the understanding is that the delegation has a political authority, has the necessary political authority so that people can do the work that they are supposed to do. For example, at the national level, this is one of the performance areas of ministers and DMs. So we suppose that the same will obtain at the provincial level where the premiers will make sure that the delegation is linked to the performance of the delegated people. So there is a significant political authority to ensure that those who have been delegated do exactly what they have been delegated to do. Now, with respect to the impact of turnover, it is a foregone conclusion that when you have that high turnover of CFOs, chief technology officers, and MMs in municipalities, then we have a very big challenge. Now, we have made this observation in a number of reports that we have prepared as a DPME, including in what we call the program of action to the principals. And one of the things that we have been grappling with is the political admin interface, how best to deal with that. We are working on the same issue at the national level. So, Chair, I would suggest that at a later stage, perhaps ourselves, the PSA and DCOG, come
We have lost you now. You are muted.
Excuse me? At the national level to deal with this. But the point being made is that we have observed and we have alerted all the stakeholders that are involved as DPME that until we deal with this issue, it is at the heart of the capacity of the state. So the sooner we address this problem, the better. Now we expect the different stakeholders, including SARGA, DCOG, to do something about this situation. Unfortunately, we only monitor and make a recommendation on that. Now, on the acceptability of the district development model in the different areas, the understanding is that the president is sending ministers and DMs to participate in the DDM in the different areas. Two, the premiers are also doing the same and designating MECs to different areas. And the district mayors also have a responsibility to ensure that they liaise on the ground with the local mayors and engage with them and explain to them what it is that we're going to do. Now, what has happened at the national level, if I can give an example of Eriguana, which we were a part of, we then ensured that the minister, in this case, Minister Mthembu, and MEC Hlomuka in KZN, went to Eriguana, the Eriguana district. Then that allows the national ministers and the MECs to interface with everyone, including the district mayor and the local mayor. Now, once you do that and you have one meeting where all political principals are present, then it helps to resolve a misunderstanding in terms of the purpose of the DDM and how it's going to be implemented in the different areas. So we believe that that model that allows the national champions, the provincial champions, and the district mayors to meet with local mayors allow for that kind of an interface. It could be that, Chair, there are areas where such meetings have not taken place. But I wish to believe that in areas where such meetings have happened, then we've been able to clarify everything that needs to be clarified so that everyone can be on board. And I think as we move forward, we can revert to that issue, our own observation in terms of the buy-in, particularly by the local municipality. Because we know that for most of the time, power has always been, most of the functions have always been with the local municipalities. And now when you move some of the functions or construe to be moving some of the functions to district municipalities, you are likely to have some tensions because that amounts to some change in terms of the power configuration in the different areas. But we'll then follow up on this issue. Now with regard to the infrastructure projects that are being implemented to improve the quality of service, now, that will vary from one area to another. What has happened up to now is that COCTA has done a diagnosis of each and every municipality. So there is a chart that will show you the characteristics of a particular municipality so that when we make or come up with this plans for districts, then they are based on the specific requirements and needs of a particular district. So that is being attended to. So we envisage, speaking for national government, that government departments, when they develop their annual performance plan for the next financial year, they will also tap on what COCTA has done so that when they come with projects for the different areas, those projects are guided by what is happening in that particular area. And that will also deal with the question that one honorable member raised about the ongoing project, whether the introduction of the DDM will result in a situation whereby we skip what we have been doing and start with new project. Now, based on the availability of that data on what is happening in the different areas, we should be in a position to ensure that the projects that have been pending are accelerated, are finalized, and finished for the sake of the community. Now, with what Honorable Clark said, now, it is clear that the Municipal Finance Management Act is similar to the PFMA. So everyone by now in all spheres of government needs to know what the prescripts are. One of the things that we are looking at is consequence management, you know, the state of consequence management. First, one of a disciplinary nature, but two, of lack of performance. So as we come back with the LG MIM reports, one of the things that we want to start focusing on is dealing with consequences for compliance, because the rules of the game are already known. And this also dovetails with the issue of corruption at local government or throughout government, that we need to do something about it. Now, there was mentioned when the president spoke the other time of the National Anti-Corruption Strategy, which is quite very detailed in terms of what will be done to deal with corruption. But the moral of the answer is that there is a need for us to speed up on consequence management, not only for compliance, but also for performance. Now, I mentioned the work that we need to do on the political administration interface, not only at local government, but also at national government. And I think together with DPSA, we can come back to present on what we're doing at national level to deal with this important issue. I dealt with the corruption issue. Then Honorable Clark also asked, what will DDM entail? Will there be reports on the pilots? Yes, indeed, because up to now, our monitoring has been more on the establishment of the district development models in the different areas, as well as the impact of COVID. But key going forward is the work that we need to do now to drill in and come back to yourselves and say, in the OR Tambo municipality, since the institutionalization and the launch of the DDM, this is what is happening in that area. Now, this will entail two types of reporting. One is to report based on outputs to say this is what is happening. But then what we're trying to do at DPME is to start focusing on impact. And we will pilot the impact assessment in the next few weeks, where we are trying to get as many interns as it is possible to work with the department to go and assess the impact of government's interventions on COVID. Because the reports that we've been giving you on COVID have focused on the output that we did this, but we have not told you whether it has made a difference in the lives of the people. So that is what we are going to do. But this obviously comes with the limited resources that we have. So we will have to be creative to see how others that we work with can assist us. So I have asked the department with some to use the money that we have saved because of the delay in some of the posts that we're filling to get interns who are professionals to help us to go down there and assess the actual impact of the interventions of government. So that will be a start of us going down to look at the actual delivery beyond just talking about the structures and institutions. Now, with regard to the constitutionality of the governance model of the DDM, I think it is foregone that we don't have an option as a government not to follow what the constitution says. Now, what we refer to as decision-making capabilities of those institutions is informed by the fact that all of them have respective powers that are recognized. But there is also a need for a cooperative governance and government. And we don't think that the implementation of cooperative governance necessarily outside the bounds of the constitution. So we will follow the constitution, respect each other's powers as they are set in the constitution. Now, just to round up on my side, I've mentioned the district diagnosis that have been done. And now, Honorable Malachi on the pilot. I think what is clear with the pilot is that when it comes to technology systems, it's work in progress. You will never stay reach a stage where you will say that we are done with improving a technology innovation that we are introducing. So as much as we call it a pilot, the system is already working, and we will continue to evaluate it on a regular basis, such that it becomes optimal when deals with the kind of issues that we are trying to grapple with. So much as we refer to it as a pilot, it is in the nature of the technology systems that we'll talk like that. But what is important is that as we speak now, there is evidence of the use of the system by South Africans, and we will continue to do the review on that. But colleagues can speak on the specific timeframes of the pilot. But my emphasis is that the nature of the pilot in this case is such that you pilot as you do work, so that we can then improve on the in innovation. Now, lastly, on Honorable Motsepe, on budgeting and planning in poor municipalities, I think we have dealt with it. Now, the big question is, and this question must be confronted, whether going forward, some of the municipalities will survive the crunch, whether they can survive on their own as standalone municipalities, or there is a need for some kind of innovation, which may even result in some reconfiguration of municipalities. Now, that, in our view, is something that should be on the horizon. And I must admit that we have not gone into that as a DPME, but it's a matter that we can take up with COGTA, as Honorable Lisoma has guided, that we also look at the recent engagements between the department and the portfolio committee, and take into consideration the recommendations of the portfolio committee that it deals with that particular area. Yes, Honorable Motsepe, we have audit, internal audit committees, we have internal audit functions and external audit support in all municipalities, because that is required by the municipal, the MFMA. So it is foregone that each and every municipality needs to have these instruments. And I understand the question is loaded in that, why do we fail when we have internal audits in the different areas, in the different municipalities? And that is a measure that is not only applying to municipalities, but also we are grappling with the same issue, because we do have a bad audit, even at national government level. Why is it that even in the presence of local or internal audits, we still have a bad audit in local government? And I'll ask Hassan to perhaps time allowing to speak on this issue. Now, Honorable Ms. Lisoma, your issues around the recommendations, just very quickly on my side. We take the point that you are making, that every presentation to the portfolio committee should end with recommendations, either for what the committee needs to do in collaboration with other committees, whether in the, at the provincial level or even at the national level. For example, the case of Gauteng may entail yourself having to engage with other portfolio committees in Gauteng. I'm referring to the presidential hotline. So I take responsibility for that, and then we apologize that there were no pointed recommendations in some of the presentations that we make. So we will then that, we'll do that going forward. The marketing of the presidential hotline is a very important pillar of the work that we do. Unfortunately, due to limited resources, we can only do so much to market the presidential hotline. But what I think we need to do going forward is to use all platforms, not always about creating new platforms, but to make sure that using all the platforms, whether in business, wherever we go and interact with stakeholders, whatever documents we send out, then always remind South Africans that you have the presidential hotline to use to seek recourse for the lack of service delivery. Now, on the service delivery process, what Honorable Lisoma is referring to, in my view, is that Do we have early warning systems that can tell us what is happening out there? Our impression, honorable members, is that the local sphere of government most of the time do know what is coming up. But what we have not done, and then maybe colleagues from COCTA can speak to this, we have not done monitoring per se of protests as DPME. What we'll normally do, we will only go and investigate when there are problems so that we can inform the principals. So I think colleagues from COCTA can speak at length on this important issue. But what we can say from a DPME point of view is that when we hear that there are challenges in certain areas, we send people to go and investigate independently and then send reports to the principals so that they can know what is happening. The performance of the ministers is one of the landmark development, a significant achievement of this administration, which is good as done, and we are in the process now of wanting to publish the performance agreements that have been signed by the ministers on the website of government, the www.gov.za. So there is work that we are doing with the GCIS to prepare for the publication of the performance agreement, which in our view will go a long way in also ensuring that at the provincial and local government, something is done to deal with such issues. So Chair, I've attempted to deal with some of the issues. I think there may be one or two areas of emphasis which require very specific information that I will ask first Hassan to go straight to the point on those issues, and then Dr. Boyari will also do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. I have just noticed that Honorable Qebekhulu has raised the hand perhaps before the Mr. Hassan come in. Let me give Honorable Qebekhulu the opportunity to raise his question. He has a terrible network problem where he is in the rural areas of KZN. Honorable Qebekhulu, can you hear me now?
Yes, Chairperson. Yes. Thank you for the opportunity. Actually, I'm in Cape Town. I don't have a problem with the network. It's only that I have a challenge with my laptop. That's why I've just sent a message to the Chairperson. But the questions I wanted just to raise, Chairperson, were very simple in trying to make follow-ups on certain issues that were once raised. Since the main challenge the three spheres of government were entangled in was operating in silos, I wanted just to check whether it has been successfully addressed. Firstly, the second one was, can members, knowing that a lot has been is being said now about this DDM issue on certain districts and what called district and metros, I wanted just to check, Chairperson. Can the maybe the department can give exact municipalities where these have been implemented, so that maybe one could maybe for purposes of oversight could visit and see whether exactly things that are being said here are actually happening out there. And the other issue, although it's a concern, Chairperson, is that we seem to be seeing staging of events when the ministers and MECs are going to launch these things, but we do not actually see when these things are launched in rural areas. We don't see the traditional leadership, whereas the department sort of encompasses even the traditional affairs. That's what the things are just to raise, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Can the department respond to that as well?
Thanks, Chairperson. Starting with the last question on the role of traditional leadership, I will give still the same example of what we saw in Eriqwala, which is also a rural area, that even on the day of the launch, we had the local traditional leaders. We had also the chairperson of the house, of the provincial house of traditional leadership in KZN being part of the process. And up to what we heard when the traditional leaders spoke, they did confirm that they have been part of this process. And what we need to then do between ourselves and COGTA is then to monitor the extent to which that is happening, whether it is happening in an isolated manner, as I'm just referring to one area. But then I think the point is noted that traditional leaders play a very big role in our community. So we'll then follow up on that. But it is based on what we have experienced as a department that is happening, and also with what we are doing in Sekukune to assist our DM to launch the area where she has been deployed. We are bringing on board the traditional leadership in that area. Now, in terms of what has happened since the launch of the pilots, and I think that is the gist of the question. Now, what we do have is that in the areas that the pilot areas, a lot of work has been done in harmonizing the plans of the different areas. That will be in Etegwini, OR Tambo, and Waterberg in Limpopo. So there we have moved forward in terms of the consolidation of the plans of the different spheres of government. In the others, we still in the launch phase, and as honorable members will remember, is that the district development model starts now in the middle of a financial year. So there have been just adjustments based on what the departments were already doing. But going into the new APP, it will be a requirement that each and every department will have to show over the MTF period what will be happening in the different districts where they will be implementing a project. And as they do so, those APPs will have to correspond with the one plan, one district plan. So that is going to be done. So what we have done for this financial year, because everything happened with COVID in the middle of the financial year, we're just to align where we can align based on the available resources. So this is going to be very key in the work that we're going to do. Lastly, is this eliminating silos? The answer is yes. This seeks to do exactly that, because national departments will no longer go to districts and launch projects that you find that even the mayor does not even know, or only get invited after the fact to come and cut the ribbon. Now, there will be one plan that is going to be monitored and be evaluated by DPME. And then, of course, we bring the reports on those to ourselves. Lastly, the point is that this is a new approach that government has taken. Unfortunately, COVID happened in the midst of us starting to implement the district development model. But I wish to assure members that there is commitment throughout the government to ensure that this is done and is done well from the beginning. Thank you. I'll then ask Hassan just on very specific issues that I have not dealt with. And then Dr. Biar will do the same. We will not take anything more than 10 minutes just to wrap up on our answers. Thank you.
Thank you, DG. Can they come in?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG. DG has covered most of the issues, and I think he highlighted that I need to maybe just say something on the point around internal audit that was raised by the Honourable Member Motsepe. So, I mean, it is an extremely important question, and what we find, and this, of course, is not necessarily confined to local government, is that we have in the case of local government, you have what people say that the form is in place. So we don't have a problem. There's no issue with whether internal audit committees exist or municipal public accounts committees exist. The thing is that municipalities do establish them. But the value of the LGMM is that it doesn't look at whether they've been established. The value of the LGMM is to see to what extent they're fulfilling their role. And that's where the problem is. So generally municipalities have internal audit committees, but they don't fulfill their function according to the requirements. And that sort of affects the way in which audit improvement plans get attention or serious attention and are implemented properly, and whether internal controls are strengthened and things like that. So that's a big issue, no doubt, which accounts for a lot of the sort of problems that municipalities face in relation to audit outcomes, supply chain management issues, irregular tax expenditure, and so on. I'm not sure if there's any more, but I would also support Honorable Member Lesoma's recommendations, and I think we should in future include as part of our concluding parts recommendations. Why that's important is because, you know, as DPME, we have a specific role. Our role is, you know, in a sense, supportive. It's to use mechanisms, tools, and instruments to surface issues in government performance and so on. And in the case of LGMM, that's what we do. But the Constitution says, of course, in terms of Section 154, that the responsibility for monitoring, supporting, and enabling municipalities to fulfill their duties and mandates and functions rests with the provincial and national departments of local government. So unless that local government intergovernmental system is not properly operational and fulfills that role, you know, the support to municipalities, proper monitoring of their municipalities, and targeted interventions will not happen. Thank you.
Chair, I will ask Dr. Biari to quickly deal with issues, particularly those related to the presidential hotline, including the question that Honorable Malatsi asked on the timeframes of the pilot project.
Okay, can you come in?
Thank you. Thank you, DG, for that. Well, firstly, I want to say that we have to look at the context in which we were working in government. And I think it's important to remember that we were under a disaster management. We were following crisis management and disaster management principles at this time of lockdown. Also, you know, call centers were being developed and, you know, they were being set up to be responsive, to actually adapt and be responsive specifically to a COVID environment, specifically in terms of, you know, our social relief packages and our, you know, some of the announcements made by the president. So it's important to understand it in the context. Also, you know, we had changing regulations, and this was, you know, we had to actually ensure that the call center agents were also empowered to keep up with the pace of the changing regulations, in that they give, you know, important, they give that they were able to give proper direction or information to citizens. So that's where, you know, we have to understand that in context, because crisis management and disaster management is a discipline in its own. Now, with regard to the Gauteng one, we do also, you know, a principle of crisis management is decisive decision making. So it's you know, how they actually did their things, you know, is also important to keep that in perspective. But I also want to say that part of our hotline roles and responsibilities, we also do provide support to provinces. So we would actually be providing support and looking into the Gauteng resolution rate. I can assure the committee that that will be done, and that is part of the value chain of the work that the presidential hotline does. And I also want to say that the presidential hotline is only one tool of the frontline service delivery monitoring aspects. And we are also monitoring all the provinces from on the COVID response from a public sector monitoring view. So we look at all these as a package in making improvements or recommendations to a province, to all the provinces as well. So definitely we will be providing support to all the provinces in how COVID issues were dealt with. In terms of whether we report to communities, definitely, as I said, that our community, the presidential hotline is only one tool of an integrated frontline service delivery monitoring set of tools. And we would actually, based on our findings, we do actually work with communities. For example, in that issue of the PTO in the Giani area, when we were looking at it, we actually had to engage in communities as well, in that we know this wasn't only for the group that actually came to us at the Union Building, but there are other groups in that community. But because of lockdown, we couldn't actually pursue it. And we do have specifically a community-based monitoring arm as well, where we're finding that we have to actually, see it as a value chain of how we actually do it, and also in how we monitor the DDM in terms of the DDM, how we integrate the monitoring of and feedback to communities through our community-based monitoring, and that actually includes governance structures such as ward committees as well, because that was actually one of the questions. But admittedly, at present, we are also, learning, and definitely we have to strengthen community feedback to community. In terms of the trends, in terms of the presidential hotline results, I would say that that is well taken. Definitely we have to look at trends. But in terms specifically of the COVID responses, We will be measuring apples with oranges, because we had to actually adapt our systems. We had to be quickly responsive to actually respond to our specifically on COVID-related issues. But it's well taken, and we will definitely try and do some correlation and dig further into those aspects as well. In terms of practical examples, we do, have a communications is part of our whole value chain of our improvements as well. But I think one of the lessons learned from COVID was that we also need to work with the government, with the GCIS as well, as I had said earlier, that me being in the community engagement and communications NAT joint, definitely we see that was definitely a lesson learned, that from a presidential hotline, that link is very important as well. So because it's easier to actually resolve issues. Many of the complaints we get are information, and it's easier to respond to issues from a higher platform. We do, in terms of the citizens, we do also get measure the impact, well, not impact, but the outcomes of the presidential hotline resolutions, in that we have a citizen satisfaction survey that is administered to citizens. But once again, in our working together in our integration with the DDM, we would also keep that in mind. In terms of the Kawaliza app, we are actually going to be reviewed after 3 months. The pilot is going to be reviewed, but we are also ensuring that it's based, like the review
process is really, you know, based on the principles of science, so that we can make evidence-based decisions on the way forward. And it's also important to say that we also will be tracking the change management, because change management of staff is also important in terms of the use of technology. And we want to be absolutely sure that our own presidential hotline staff and the call center are actually taken through a process of change management. And that will be one of the KPIs that will be also monitored in the review as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we now get Costa presentation? I don't see the minister. I mean the deputy minister in. I don't know who is going to do the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all the honorable members, to the DG and the colleagues from DPME. Chair, my name is Themba Fosi. I'm the DDG in COGTA, responsible for local government support, also coordination of the rollout of the DPM project. That I don't see the deputy minister in the group, but I see the officials from the deputy minister here. I'm not sure if he's connected through them. But many of the questions that have already been asked on the DDM, I think the DG has covered many of them, but in the presentation, we will also try and respond to those questions. I will request, Chair, that the secretary, they can slide the presentation. Thank you very much. If we can move to the next slide. The next slide. Thanks. Chair, this slide, we're just reflecting on the context of the worst pandemic that we are dealing with as a country now, and the impact it has had on the country, to an extent of also exposing some of the fault lines that we're faced with as a country in terms of increased levels of poverty, hunger, and unemployment, but also exposing the digital divide between the first and the second sort of economy, if you like. However, Chair, the pandemic has also demonstrated how government can be agile and work in a more responsive and coherent and integrated way in terms of how we have responded as government overall to the pandemic, including improving some of the systems around technology in terms of quick decision-making processes. Next slide. We can move to the next slide. And then also, Chair, I think what the pandemic has, if you move, yes, the next slide. If you look at this slide, what the pandemic, the lessons in how government is responding, but also the impact of COVID, it has demonstrated that we really need new thinking and consider radical approaches to how we deal fundamentally with some of the perennial problems that we're faced with in terms of transforming the ownership patterns, in terms of the economy, to ensure expansion of assets, access to land and finance, look at how we strengthen social safety nets to build resilience sort of South Africa. But also unlocking value chains of production and service delivery to ensure that more mass-based economic participation is actually realized, and strengthening the local economic development. What is important with the next slide? district development model, that it's not another new program or project. It is predicated on the constitutional provisions and the responsibilities and obligations that we have as the three spheres. So if you look at going back to the RDP, some of the policy documents that have informed policy of government, look at the white paper on local government and some of the critical sort of constitutional sections in terms of the objects of local government and the emphasis being on effective provision of services, but also promoting social and economic development, providing basic needs of the people and creating jobs, basic services, which will include also issues of housing, water, electricity, and so on. Even the section 153, developmental duties of local government, basic needs and promoting social and economic development. The critical one, Chair, which I think speaks to the role of this new approach, is the role in terms of section 154 of the Constitution, where both national and provincial governments have an obligation to support and strengthen the capacity of municipalities to manage their own functions and responsibilities. So if you take that section 154 and the chapter 3 of the Constitution in terms of cooperative governance and the IGR, whilst we have distinct spheres, we have an obligation to provide an integrated and a coherent government for the Republic. And the principles of cooperative governance must then inform how we work. And what the district development model, it provides then that approach of how the three spheres can operationalize in a more programmatic way, where these three spheres, in a targeted and coherent way, will work together. The success of the district development model, it is, of course, dependent on creating functional municipalities, effective municipalities, with the right expertise and systems to drive their developmental responsibilities. Looking at those areas in terms of good governance, ensuring the sound financial management, and also ethical and effective leadership, and then putting proper systems for delivery of services and infrastructure, and creating these vibrant communities. I'll ask that you move to the next slide. You can skip this one. I mean, this is just an emphasis on some of the policy principles. If you move to the slide 6 on the objects of the district model, and then these are the objectives, Chair, that were adopted by Cabinet when they adopted this approach, that this model is meant to really solve the silos, the duplication and fragmentation in how the three spheres work. Narrow the distance between the people, ensure that we deliver integrated services. But also more importantly, we look at inclusive and gender responsive budgeting that responds to the needs of communities and our people, and target the challenges of youth unemployment, which is a big challenge that we're faced as a country. Ensure that we inculcate the long range planning in the whole system. We have a national development plan that sets out a long-term vision and goals for the country. Those goals must be translated and broken down into specific targets that can be achieved in the 52 spaces, which is your 44 districts and the 8 metros. This slide, just we look at how some of the lessons on how the other countries have approached the issue of long-term planning. And you look at the Chinese model here. Of course, they look at this to look at their endowment structure in terms of what does it have, the different districts, what do they have, what are their comparative advantages, and what sort of industrial structure do you need to facilitate and promote to ensure that you are then able to structurally address some of the structural transformation issues. And if you move to the next slide, we're just sharing, Chair, a case study on OR Tambo. just to emphasize the point about the importance of this long-term planning, and then also the three spheres focused in a targeted way to address the developmental needs and opportunities. So if you look at OR Tambo, whilst OR Tambo is one of the top 10 poorest districts in the country, the paradox is that OR Tambo, it's one of the poorest, but it's actually also a very rich district. If you look at the untapped potential of that district in terms of agriculture, tourism, and the ocean's economy. If you look at the next slide then gives you some of the opportunities, untapped opportunities that are there. We're just reflecting in that slide that Minister Senzo Mchunu is the champion deployed to this district. And if we are to reimagine OR Tambo, we need to look at then what are some of the sort of key economic drivers that can transform and unlock the opportunities that are in this district. And they would range from issues of agriculture, opportunities, agro-processing, look at the blue oceans economy, the fisheries, forestry, manufacturing, and tourism. And all the locals in OR Tambo will have specific comparative advantages in terms of endowment around these opportunities. And then we must also look at then that district as a whole in terms of the long term. And this is another area in terms of the key to unlocking the potential of this district. We're looking at the whole Wild Coast corridor, which is actually the critical sort of opportunity that can bring, that connect firstly OR Tambo with the neighboring Alfred Nzo district, but also with Amatole in terms of the Wild Coast sort of corridor. And then it links up with all the different sort of opportunities that are there and the locals in that district. So investing in that Wild Coast corridor will unlock a lot of opportunities in that district. And of course, OR Tambo is known for as a sending, labor sending district in terms of mining. You can move to the next slide. I've already made this point. It's known as a labor sending sort of district in terms of to KZN, Northwest, and Gauteng sort of economy. So there is also a link with those districts. And when we plan for a long-term plan and unlocking opportunities of OR Tambo, we must also look at those sort of linkages with the other, either neighboring districts or other provinces. The next slide, we're trying then to reflect here in terms of the institutional mechanisms that have been established. The DG has already spoken to the issue of the champions. And those champions will be supported by COCTA, working with the other key departments, DPME, National Treasury, and also other critical sectors that have a footprint in that district. But we have also established a hub, which will be support sitting outside of the district, acting as a central point of coordination to ensure that all the districts, when they come to that district, they are coordinated at one central point in relation to how they support the one plan process. So the DG made the point that you're avoiding situation where the national department parachutes projects to that district. But there's one plan for that district and all departments are integrated and aligned to how they contribute to that one plan. So the one plan is an expression of clear budget commitments and investments and programs of national and provincial government, including the municipalities themselves in terms of what are the priority areas that are going to be funded to unlock opportunities in terms of driving the economy of that area, but also what are the opportunities at a community level that unlocks economic activities to empower child and woman-headed households, the unemployed youth, but also how do we respond to the infrastructure needs of that district based on a clear long-term infrastructure plan, economic recovery plan, and a financial sustainability plan of that municipality. In addition to the hub, Chair, we're also looking at establishing these municipal shared support services, which will be a group of experts that will be deployed to provide hands-on support in the municipalities. And that hands-on support, it will be based on a comprehensive institutional capacity assessment done on the state of those municipalities in terms of what are the challenges in financial management, in terms of infrastructure, on governance. So that assessment gives us, in the same way as we have a profile of that district, but we also know what is the state of the municipalities, how have they been performing in terms of audit outcomes, what are the challenges that they have. If they don't have skills or infrastructure, we then assist with provision of support around the infrastructure planning or financial management and so on. The next slide, in terms of just progress on some of the work that has been done, just a clear sort of roadmap. So the pilot projects were launched late last year. The cabinet approved the model in August. We started launching in OR Tambo, Waterberg, and Etewini. We have appointed the hubs in Waterberg and OR Tambo. They are currently now developing an action plan, and they've started the process on the one plan with those the district, and we're interacting with the various stakeholders, even outside of government, to look at how business, how some of the critical community organization, academic institutions, can also support the process of developing this one plan. We do have profiles of all the 52 district municipalities. These profiles are important set of analysis that must guide how national and provincial government responds to the needs and opportunities of each district. So the profiles are comprehensive. They give you sort of a comprehensive state of development of that district, looking at the levels of poverty, unemployment, performance of the economy, which are the key sectors, also social challenges in terms of child and woman-headed households, the health status of the district, crime, the state of the infrastructure. So it's a comprehensive profile that gives you a good set, idea of what is the extent of the problem in each district. And our view is that those profiles must then inform the plan in the other spheres, the provincial and the national level. And that profile is also, as I've said, complemented by a profile that looks at the institutional capacity of the municipalities themselves. The champions have been appointed to also facilitate oversight over, firstly, how all the three spheres are responding to COVID, but also what are some of the impact of COVID on those municipalities, and how national and provincial government working together can and respond to the impact of COVID. But also they'll be involved in the whole facilitation of the development of this one plan. So these are some of the progress, Chair. So the champions are actively visiting the districts. Currently, KZN has launched about 10. We just left with one district, which will be launched in 2 weeks' time. Limpopo has launched 2 out of the 3. The champions continue to engage, Chair, with this district, and those are some of the provinces that have been visited. And we continue to also work with the champions to support them in this visit, but also producing reports out of these visits that gives us a sense of what are the issues that are coming out of the outcome of these visits. If you look at the next slide, we begin to just reflect on some of those challenges, issues of service delivery, issues especially around water, housing, and the challenges of maintenance of infrastructure. The issue of the increasing municipal debt and the ability of some of the municipalities to collect and the impact of COVID in terms of now all spheres continuing to encourage our people to comply with the regulations on COVID in terms of wearing of masks, prohibition of large gatherings, and then issues of social distancing. We do have some challenges, but we are working with the champions in terms of ensuring that they're able to report back. And the National Disaster Management Center is the sort of central point of coordination, the work of the champions. And some of the champions have gone directly to the district. This is my last slide, Chair. Just to indicate the point that was raised by the DG, we have met with DPME Treasury as COCTA to develop guidelines that must inform the planning and the budgeting process. Firstly, to ensure that the APPs that will be developed in the 2021 are aligned to the district development model approach, but the budget guidelines also incorporates the spatial budgeting principles to ensure that every investment that government spends, it can actually be geo-referenced to a specific area, but also with clear sort of commitment and intention of how is it responding to the challenges of that area. The one plan process has started in the three pilots. The coordinating structures have been established, and I agree with the DG that these structures are not replacing or introducing any new structures. We are building on the structures that already are provided by the Constitution, but these are more structures for coordination, for enhancing coordination across and within the three spheres. The local government stabilization program, this is a program that we will actually be looking at how, in a more targeted way, we deal with some of the perennial problems that the honorable members have raised, whether it's in terms of skills shortages, poor performance in terms of finances, the issue of infrastructure, how we plan. There are quite a number of uncompleted projects. How do we inculcate a new sort of planning paradigm and discipline in addressing infrastructure needs? We are establishing an IMS information management system that is going to ensure that we have a repository of all of these one plans, the profiles, but also what each department is actually investing and committing to do in each of the districts. And that will also be used as a monitoring tool working with DPME systems to ensure that there's one coherent monitoring tool for government that gives us a good sort of insight of how government is spending and what is it committing in terms of budget with clear timelines and milestones that will give us a good sense of how as a country overall we're working on this. The last point about the regulatory framework, we want to also Chair, anchor this in the legislation. So Section 47 of the IGR Act provides for the minister to regulate the alignment of plans across the three spheres. And the one plan is one sort of provision that can be regulated through that act. But also the IGR Act provides for protocols, IGR protocols, which will express clear commitments of the three spheres. So we will utilize those tools that are already provided for in the IGR Act. But we will work with the other departments to ensure that we look at how we rationalize the many planning instruments across government. But this is the beginning of the process, and we're looking at the, as the process evolves, we look at how we strengthen even the issues of consolidation of the grants, so that we're all focused on in a targeted way to addressing some of the challenges. And this process will be aligned, Chair, to some of the critical interventions that are driven at a national level, the infrastructure, the SIBs, through the infrastructure that have been gazetted, that are led by the president. How are those linked to the human settlement catalytic project, and how all of these projects are expressed, find expression in the plans of the different district municipalities, and look at all of these in one plan, so that you don't have multiplicity of plans and processes across government, but government works in a coherent and targeted way to change the conditions of this district. There has been a good traction, Chair. We have interacted with the provinces, the districts, and we've consulted even stakeholders outside of government. Traditional leaders have been consulted as part of this process. And as we visit the districts, we interact with all the stakeholders, from traditional leaders, faith-based organization, business, to ensure that the one plan are inclusive, but also express a shared vision for this district, which all the stakeholders can own up and commit to. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, honourable members. Can I note hands? Can the members raise hands on the platform so that I note all of them at once? See two so far. Can Honorable Soma come in?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think there's not much one will say, because also it tend to have overlapped with DPM presentation in a way. Having said that, let's appreciate the municipal mapping, as it were, which does assist in terms of appreciating and understanding the opportunities that various districts has within the country. If I may ask, Chair, there is a 2030 vision. Subject to correction, we are left with 10 years. But the way the presentation talks to, it's like, I hope it's not like that, but it sounded like you are starting all over again. We have just discovered South Africa. That could be my limitation. But also what is good then, it does from the NDP document, talks to, for me, in chapter four and six, which then talks to the envisaged future of South Africa, the way we see it moving forward. But also what has been presented, Chair, it won't be realized from where I'm seated if then we don't go and closely revisit the systems and strengthen them as per the AG's pronouncement recently in terms of the weak system that also allows negative opportunistic behaviors and tendencies within the public sector. Because all what has been presented, if we don't have a properly standing governance structures, as it were, and the systems, the private sector would not necessarily have a buy-in, noting that the fiscal of government also is shrinking. So I'm saying that we must also look at that. And I know that is not the responsibility squarely of COGTA, but DPSA and related bodies also need to look at that so that they can support the last program or plan that has been presented that can give us a hope, economically and socially speaking. But also I might have omitted for now from this plan, are we going to get an annexure of a plan that will talk now to how do we then move forward in terms of realizing the plan that has been presented with a clear time frame? Because among other things that as public representatives is to measure performance. And if there are no clear time frames, would not necessarily be able to measure it. Hence, I make reference to 2030, which you are left with 10 years. Other than that, one is encouraging expired chair with a good work thus far. Thank you very much.
Honorable Schreiber.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues. Good morning. Chair, I have a couple of concerns that I'd like to raise specifically on this district development model. The first one is I'd like to ask the department to show me where the district of OR Tambo ever elected Minister Senzo Mtunu as their so-called champion. What exactly is the legal basis for so-called deployment of someone who is elected at the national level of government to go and be a champion, quote unquote, at a local government level? Chair, I really am very concerned about this. There's no basis in our constitutional democracy for deploying someone to go and interfere in the affairs of a democratically elected local government. And I'd go so far as to say that I'm concerned that it is tantamount to a coup to go and interfere in the affairs and operations of municipalities. I think there's a danger here that we have, or that the department and the government is willfully misdiagnosing the problems. We've seen in South Africa that municipalities can work. There are municipalities in South Africa that work. They don't have to be centralized and have local democracy be undermined through this kind of thing. We've seen that many municipalities in the Western Cape and other DA-run municipalities like Midval are working very effectively without this kind of central state interference. The reality is that we have a political problem in these municipalities, a political problem which sees corrupt people being re-elected time after time to just keep destroying and undermining governance in these municipalities. It is a political problem that requires a political solution, and trying to deflect from that political reality by making it seem like decentralization or federalism or subsidiarity is the problem, I think is extremely disingenuous. And I think the government and the department must be well aware that they are not going to just get away with what appears to be in many ways tantamount to a coup here by deploying people to interfere in municipalities who have absolutely no constitutional mandate to do so. Thank you, Chair.
Well, can I get responses from the department?
Chairperson.
Okay, wait a bit. I see that Honorable
Motsepe.
Okay. Come in, Honorable Motsepe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to welcome the presentation and the presenter as well. I've got only two questions here. Is the district development model has the potential to reduce duplication, wastage, and corruption across the three spheres of government? Question one. Number two is, with two directors responsible for the monitoring provinces, the department has, does the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation need more capacity to monitor provinces? Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you. Can I get responses to the question raised so far and comments also? You are free to comment on comments.
Okay. Now, thanks very much, Chairperson. I think the first question from the honourable member, Lusoma, the part of the problem that we are trying to address with this approach is to actually, when you talk about addressing the silos, duplication and fragmentation in how the three spheres are working. What you have currently, you have plans of national government, you have plans of provinces, you have plans of the municipalities themselves. So there's IDPs, SDPs, provincial government will have its own APPs, but also their provincial growth and development plan. Nationally, you'll have various, so there's the NDP, which is meant to be sort of, or the APPs and the plans of these departments are meant to actually translate that NDP into implementable targets. But the reality is that in practice, all of these plans are not integrated and they come at a municipal level in varied way, but not in a coherent way. Let me give you some of the examples that with the lessons that we've learned in Oartam. When we went to Oartam, because we also asked national and provincial departments to give us their budget and program. So one of the examples we looked at, there were about five departments that are providing training targeting the youth. But all of these programs, the focus was really more around, you know, certification of the youth without really providing sustainable skills development and opportunities beyond training. And if you are talking about an integrated way, all of these departments with a budget of over 100 million, if we're working on one plan targeting the youth of Oartam, we can actually the DDM provides us with an opportunity then to say, how do we work together to address that problem? There were schools that were identified where schools are built in areas where there's no sort of pupils or learners, and which is a problem in terms of how we plan. But it's the issue of working in silos, not talking together in how we respond. So the issue of the 10 years, the idea behind the long-term plan is to have a long-term plan that is over 30 or 25 years that can then be broken down into five-year electoral term, but with clear commitments of how you then, what are the building blocks towards achieving that long-term. And one of the areas we want to look at is to ensure that this long-term plan is actually protected in legislation so that every five-year administration that comes on board, they don't change the priorities or that long-term plan, but they must actually focus on their contribution to achieving that long-term plan. In that way, we're able then to measure how the NDP is actually being implemented in the various district spaces based on the same sort of targets that everyone is clear about. The point that I've raised, I mean, I agree with the honorable member around firstly strengthening the weak system, which is the point that the success of the DDM is also dependent on functional and professional and sustainable municipalities that have good governance processes, effective and ethical leadership, but there's sound financial management. There's capacity and skills for delivering infrastructure and responding to service delivery. So the point about the hub and this shared municipal support is to have a targeted approach on how we integrate capacity building programs across the three spheres, so that as it relates to a particular district, everyone who's providing capacity building program or there are grants targeted on capacity building, they're coordinated in one point and is targeted in terms of what do we want to improve based on the assessment that is done of that district. Currently, capacity building, many sectors have capacity building and they're going to those districts providing all sorts of training, but it's not coordinated and not integrated. And now with this approach, it gives us one one plan that can be, we can deal with the developmental issues, but also deal with the building and professionalizing these institutions. Chair, I think the second question, the honorable member the DDM, as I've indicated, it's predicated on the constitutional provision. The strengthening coordination across the three spheres is an intergovernmental responsibility of all the three spheres, and it's not a centralization of power at national level. The champions that we're talking about here, these are not champions that are going to be taking over functions of municipalities, but they are meant to ensure that they assist in unlocking some of the misalignment, intergovernmental misalignment. Let me give you an example. Etegwin, including some of the Western Cape municipalities that are doing well, one of the problems that they have, you don't have firm commitments of how national government or sector departments are contributing to those plans of municipalities. And strengthening the coordination across and within the three spheres, the champions' work is to actually assist in unlocking. So if when we went to Etegwin, one of the problems that we identified was the issue of the harbor in Etegwin. And the municipality, the city, could not address that problem. It required Department of DPE, it required Transnet to come on board and work with the city to address that problem. And now there's a team, intergovernmental team, and the champions in Etegwin are working with national departments, the province, and the city to address that problem. So it's not about taking over functions. The champions is not their role to take over any function, but just ensure that they facilitate intergovernmental cooperation and collaboration across the three spheres, unlock challenges, but do oversight in ensuring that the three spheres are focused on achieving the constitutional cooperative governance principles of the three spheres, working collaboratively to achieve the developmental goals of the country. And there's no provision or legislation that says we must provide for champions, but your cooperative governance responsibilities and the IGR structures that exist ensures that the champions work with the provinces, they work with municipalities, and they're able to bring critical sectors from national that can assist those municipalities. And that's the overall objectives of these champions, is not to take over or centralizing any power at national level, but is to ensure that commitments of, let me give you another example. When IDPs were conceptualized, they were meant to be an instrument that brings all of government in local government space. But the reality is that from practice, the past 25 years, national sector departments have not been participating in IDP processes. And this approach, it says, we must then, these champions must assist in facilitating those processes to ensure that those critical national sector departments, they are part, there's clear commitment in responding to the needs at a local level. So it is an intergovernmental obligation for the three spheres to work together. And these champions are really meant to enhance those constitutional provisions, not centralizing any power. And the last question, whether we have the DDM has the potential to reduce duplication, corruption. The idea of the one plan is to ensure that it's an instrument that can express. So there's no department that is implementing in a particular. But let me start by saying local government is the only space where all three spheres implement. So national government has a responsibility to clearly indicate what contribution are they making in a particular space, which is why we're emphasizing the issue of special budget. And the province must do the same. If then we have one plan that expresses all of government's commitment, including private sector, SOEs, and all the stakeholders, that one plan is a one plan that is going to be measured because it's based on the budget and clear budget commitments and programs of support that each department, each sphere is committing to that district. It also introduces issues of accountability, because if each department has made commitment, we're able then, through monitoring of this one plan, we're able to see which sector department, which sphere is not playing its part in the achievement of those commitments that are there. And because now this one plan is not a local government plan, it's a plan of all of the 3 spheres. We're able to hold each other accountable because there's clear commitments that have been made in the one plan. We can hold each other accountable to the commitments that have been made in the one plan. And I think, Chair, just to emphasize the point, we're not really misdiagnosing the problem. We know what the state of development of the various municipalities, including municipalities that are dysfunctional, including municipalities that are performing well, and how do we support them to ensure that they're able then to deal with some of the problems. And then the DDM provides us with an opportunity now not to deal with political problems. I mean, I'm not a politician, but the political problems will be resolved at the political level. But through this approach, we're able to build systems, we're able to professionalize local government, ensure that the competency requirements are met by all municipalities. We employ the right people with the right skills, and we support municipalities that are struggling in terms of attracting skills in the particularly your rural municipalities. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Let me thank both departments, COGTA and DPME, for their presentation to the portfolio committee. And once again, also thank the honorable members for availing themselves for this portfolio committee meeting. Thank you very much, all of you. The meeting stands adjourned now.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair.